The framework came about through President Obama's February executive order on cybersecurity, and it embodies the administration's view that private sector infrastructure operators that are critical to the nation's well-being should live up to a minimum level of cybersecurity standards. Compliance with the framework is voluntary, but NIST says plenty of private sector actors have stepped forward to help develop it. The agency counts 1,500 people who've attended workshops to help develop the framework this year, and another 2,000 who've participated online. Patrick Gallagher, the Undersecretary of Commerce for Standards and Technology and NIST's director, says the preliminary version of the framework should be out by mid-October. NIST will spend 3 months gathering public comments, and a final 1.0 version is targeted for February.
There are really two major moving parts to the framework. One is a collection of existing standards and practices. You will recognize many of them. They are there by reference, and they are reflecting all of the input. And the second major element is a structure, a framework in the true sense of the word that organizes those practices and provides really a set of tools that support the use and adoption of those standards and practices.
Gallagher says it was clear from the outset of the process that the framework needed to be flexible enough to be adopted by companies of any size or cyber capability. So the initial version will be targeted around three structures. One, breaking down five different types of cyber defense activity. Another, addressing various levels of cybersecurity maturity within an organization. And finally, a set of profiles designed to let companies assess how capable they are at defending against cyber attacks and improve from there.
It identifies a set of implementation tiers. Now, these are a way of looking at the maturity of adoption from a early adopter, low maturity organization that may be very rule-based to a highly mature organization that has integrated risk management in all levels. In other words, you can think of it as analogous to a cultural approach, much like we've seen in safety management and other risk management activities within business, where you go from a compliance rule-based approach to a fully integrated risk management culture within the organization. And the framework supports that. A key construct of the framework is that there is no threat proofing. There's no magic bullet here. This is about not eliminating the problem. This is about managing it.
With the initial drafting process now complete, Gallagher says NIST will move quickly into the implementation phase. He says the framework is not worth much if companies don't adopt it. He described three challenges ahead, though, to make the framework relevant. First, NIST and the industry members who help develop the framework have to convince companies to adopt it, not just within their IT offices, but throughout their organizations.
Businesses and organizations have to take these practices, map it into their own situation, find out where they're at, use the profiles, and put it into practice. This can't simply live on the shelf in the IT security department. It's vital that it permeate all levels of the organization. And in principle, we are quite focused on engaging the business leadership, the C-suite executives who have an overall responsibility in these companies. And a large part of our effort now will focus on that outreach and that adoption.
Secondly, adoption within a given company is not enough, Gallagher says. He says the framework needs to become part of the broader marketplace and align good cybersecurity practices with good business practices.
This means that the framework has to also be integrated into business-to-business transactions, contracts, service level agreements. It has to look at customers' engagement. It also means that we have to look at global adoption. Our framework should be integrated into worldwide standards practices so it's compatible with activities around the world. This may include conformity assessment vehicles, things like conformance testing or certification or other types of product identification so that businesses understand and can identify conforming practices in the market. And it also includes the discussion that many of you heard about, of course, which is the incentives. In other words, what are the barriers to adoption? Where are the places where the market doesn't behave, and how do we promote that?
Finally, Gallagher says, just as the framework urges companies to continuously improve their processes, NIST needs to continually build on the framework itself based on real-world experience as companies put it into action.
If this framework process we just did over the last 8 months is a once through and we're done, we also fail. The technology is too dynamic. I don't believe the framework is perfect. We expect companies that adopt it and to put it into use are going to identify places where it makes no sense and has to be adjusted. where there's gaps that have to be addressed. And so we have to now operationalize this collaboration we've built and turn the framework into a continuous process. So right away, we need to start thinking about Framework 2.0. And those early adopters, those companies and organizations that take up the challenge and start putting this into use are going to play a key role because they're going to shape the framework I think will shape and drive the governance of that framework process. This has to be an industry-led effort.
Over the next few months, NIST and other agencies will also be working through other processes designed to support and monitor the adoption of the framework. The February executive order also told agencies to examine their current regulations and practices to determine which ones might be hindering good cybersecurity practices and how they might be able to incentivize the firms they regulate to adopt the framework. Michael Daniel is the White House Cybersecurity Coordinator.
Some of this analysis was pending the framework process actually settling down enough that we could begin to apply the incentives in a more specific way to actually look at them. So over the next few months, as we get ready to roll out with the final framework, we are looking at what that set of incentives are that we could use under current authority. What we might actually have to go back and ask for legislatively, which, given the speed at which legislation moves, that's obviously a much longer-term process. So we're beginning to kind of rack and stack all of that, and I expect that we'll have kind of the next iteration will probably be as we roll out the voluntary program in more detail, and the Framework 1.0, you'll see more on those incentives.
Also, the Department of Homeland Security has been drawing up a list of privately owned U.S. infrastructure assets that are so critical that a cyber attack that took them offline would cause a major catastrophe. Daniel says that step is designed in part to measure how well the government is doing at getting the cyber framework adopted.
If you don't have a denominator to measure against, you don't know how well you're doing. And I think that was the primary impetus behind this. DHS has gone through a rather quite impressive degree of analysis to arrive at the initial set of these assets. And we are beginning the notification process now, and we've been working out how to do this. Obviously, the list in its totality is something that we need to keep classified, keep close hold on, because that's not something we want to hand to our adversaries. But obviously, the companies themselves need to be aware and need to be able to talk about it amongst themselves. So that's something that we've been working out, and we're beginning that process right now.
Daniel says companies shouldn't read too much into whether their firm's assets appear on the secret list or not. He says it's primarily designed to give DHS a better understanding of the layout and risk profile of the nation's most critical infrastructure. In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.